Broadcasting on the web and locally on 90.1 Hope FM. This is your Election 15.
It's 2 a.m. I'm Jeff Buckridge and this is the latest news. And it's breaking news that the Conservatives hold a key Labour target seat in Nuneaton with a majority of 4,882. In the election so far, Labour have 9 seats and the Conservatives 4 seats. Polling expert John Curtis said the results so far broadly reflect the exit polls, which suggests the Conservatives will end up with the most seats. He has said that the initial forecast is looking reasonably okay. However, he does not rule out the Conservatives taking 323 seats, which would give them a majority in the Commons. In Dorset, Lib Dem candidate Philip Eades has told us it's an indictment of the electoral system that Conservative Robert Sims didn't attend the Paul Hustings. Speaking to your Election 15, Philip Eades says it is a disappointment that the Tory candidate will receive such a strong seat after putting in little effort.
As it turns out, Mr. Sims is quite right. What he said was he doesn't have to be here in Poole. It's a safe Tory seat. The opposition is split in at least 4 ways. And so he spent his time in Mid Dorset and North Poole. But unfortunately, you know, all that is an indictment of the electoral system. It isn't the love there is for him in Poole. He'll probably win tonight with about 40 to 45% of the vote, which means, you know, at least 50,000 people in Poole, their vote either they didn't vote or their vote won't count.
Conservative candidate Mims Davis is seemingly on her way to winning in Eastleigh, having overturned Liberal Democrat Mike Thornton's majority. This is based on Lib Dem and Conservative insiders' analysis of early tallies. Mr. Thornton won the seat at the 2013 by-election after disgraced MP Chris Hune resigned. The Liberal Democrat candidate for Great Grimsby says a party leadership election is on the cards, whether Nick Clegg keeps his seat or not. Steve Besson also says he believes there will be another general election before Christmas. Labour's Tristram Hunt has told reporters Ed Miliband has exceeded expectations in the general election. The candidate hoping to become Education Secretary claimed the Labour leader is not under pressure to lose the party leadership. The Press Association has reported that SNP sources have claimed that the party is set to gain Motherwell and Wishaw, where Labour had a 16,806 majority over the Nationalists in 2010. Labour sources have highlighted the projection that Greens will win Norwich South. However, the Greens privately do not think Norwich South is possible this time, and Bristol West is the only seat they could possibly gain. Geoffrey Donaldson is the first MP to be elected in Northern Ireland, retaining his seat for the Democratic Unionist Party in Lagan Valley. Donaldson was re-elected to Westminster with a majority of 13,000 votes, an increase of 2,500 from 2010. There are 18 general election results to be declared in Northern Ireland. You're up to date. Join us again at 2:30.
This is your Election 50. Get in touch using the hashtag YE50.
That's right, you are listening to Your Election 15, streaming live across the internet and also on 90.1 Hope FM across the Bournemouth, Poole and Dorset area. The time has just gone 3 minutes past two. We are joined by Betty Glover. Hello, Betty.
Guys,
welcome back.
Oh, thank you. So in the last hour there has been a lot of talk about Mr. Farage, which probably doesn't surprise a lot of you listeners, but he has recently explained that he has given his absolute best to the election campaign. However, if he fails to win South Thanet's seat, then that will be, in his words, the chop. He has stated that the election experience has turned him into a full convert for proportional representation. Farage has also given a grilling from notorious pub landlord Al Murray, who is standing up against the UKIP leader in the constituency. When asked what he thought of the prospect of UKIP not winning the election, he explained that the UK would be walking with history. He further added that if he himself won the seat, then that would be the deserved result. Murray made one more dig, and this time at the controversial figure Russell Brand, explaining that Brand had miraculously changed his mind right at the last minute when deciding to vote after he had heavily campaigned for the electorate to abandon the process altogether. Moving on, police are investigating a claim of election fraud in Glasgow East. Suspicions first arose when a person came in and gave a name and address for which a ballot had already been cast. Council staff had been able to find the ballot paper and hand it to police as evidence. Of course, the paper was nevertheless counted.
So do we have any more reactions to the exit polls, Betty?
Well, Dom, even though we have to just wait a while longer until we find out about how the rest of the seats have been won, Party Chief Whip Michael Gove has given his opinion, saying that the Conservatives have clearly won, but Labour's Shadow Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, said she was puzzled by the poll and urged people to wait for the results before making the predictions.
OK, well, thank you, Betty, and I'm sure we'll see you again soon.
You will do. See you later.
Thanks, Betty. North Dorset is a rural area with strong Conservative following.
Our reporter Magdalena Belenovic went down to find out what particular parties and policies are important to people of North Dorset.
The rural constituency of North Dorset consists of five little towns of Blenford, Foreham, Gillingham, Shaftesbury, Stirminster Newton and Verwood. Five candidates are trying to win over North Dorset's residents to become their local MP. For the Green Party, Richard Barrington; for Labour, Kim Fendley; for the Conservative, Simon Hoare; for the Liberal Democrats, Hugo Miwill; and for the UKIP, Steve Unwin. After 18 years in office, the former Conservative MP, Bob Walter, has decided to stand down and Simon Hoare will be hoping to take his place. It looks like Mr. Walter has served North Dorset quite well, because support for the Conservatives is still strong, but other parties are cropping up as well.
At the moment, probably I'm more conservative than anything else.
There's not one party that has the answer to all the issues that I mentioned, but I'd probably vote for Labour.
It's got to be UKIP, I'm afraid, because I don't know, the party, they just seem more in touch with reality. You know, they sort of, Nigel Farage seems to know what's sort of like going on. Properly, you know.
You know, my children can't really afford to live round here, so that jobs, you know, that's the main sort of thing, that the kids can have jobs and be able to have a life.
Things like the economy, you know, because a lot of money escapes Verwood and the local surrounding communities because it's ploughed into bigger towns and cities. And almost, you know, focused on the southeast.
There's not really much around here you can do with the little ones. You end up going miles away to take them soft plays. So anything around here, yeah, would be great.
The older, the less mobile, and the disabled are just, their needs are not being addressed. And it's the one thing that David Cameron has personal experience of, and you never hear him mention it.
We're now back in the studio with Dan to continue a little bit on the topic of North Dorset, if you're feeling brave enough.
Yes, thanks Dan for coming in. So it seems that the rural area is particularly concerned with mobility and local economy. How do you think this has affected their votes tonight?
On the issues, I think that's not something the Conservatives have campaigned on a lot. And the Conservative, the coalition's cuts in the last 5 years hit those groups the hardest. But I still think North Dorset is traditionally a strong Conservative seat. So I doubt that issues will persuade people from not voting what they voted for the last, I don't know how many elections, you know. I think that generally when we vote, it takes a lot of interest in a specific issue to say, okay, and now I'm going to change for the first time. Let's say you're a 60-year-old voter and say, okay, now on this specific issue, I will vote something else for the first time in my life, maybe. So, and I'm not sure if those specific issues are enough to affect the results in North Dorset. So, I doubt it's just one of those safe seats that will vote Conservatives no matter what. As it's the same in the north of England with Labour, yeah. So that's not different there. We can say like the Blair government was a lot of policies different or the opposite from what Labour promises now, and yet there's still safe seats where people vote Labour no matter what. So I think that's the same with North Dorset. Also, although people care about specific issues and are affected by specific issues more, I don't think the impact of those issues is stronger than being used to and being always having been a Labour Tory supporter.
It's okay. It's that funny hour of the morning, isn't it, where words start to slip out with when you're meant to say something different.
Yeah.
So across the UK as a whole, obviously, this particular seat considered a safe seat. If we're to look more at the key marginal battles across the UK, mm-hmm. what are the ones that you're really looking out for? I know it's approaching 2:10 in the morning. We want people to stay tuned to find out those key battles and those key areas to look out for. If you could just highlight those for us.
What I'm personally looking forward to is Nigel Farage's seat in North Thanet. Is it South Thanet? North Thanet.
North, I think.
North,
yeah.
I think it is, yeah. And at the moment, the exit polls are not looking good. It's two UKIP seats, which might be the former Conservative, the deflectors, who became UKIP members and then UKIP MPs. So that's what I'm waiting for. On the other marginal seat is, it's just, at the moment, it's just, there's so many 60-odd marginal seats. There's nothing... It sounds bad, but there's nothing, no specific one I'm interested in. It's just how they swing and how they will affect the exit polls. So the one I'm looking forward to is, as I said, Nigel Farage's seat. Or not seat, ooh. Nigel Farage's constituency he's running in. And also the Green in Brighton and Bristol. That's my three favourite ones, so I'm definitely going to stay awake for.
Well, thanks very much, Dan. If there's one thing we can guarantee, it's that we'll still be awake for that as well, buddy.
Good.
We're going to be here till 10 in the morning. Thanks very much, Dan. We'll speak to you in a bit later.
I hope so. Thanks.
Thank you for coming in.
So you're listening to Your Election 15. We are live on 90.1 Hope FM. It's fast approaching 2:15 in the morning, can you believe? And we've just been rejoined by our political editor, Alex Folkard. How are you doing, Alex?
Not too bad. I'm lagging slightly, but the coffee's kicked in, so it's all good.
Excellent.
Yes, we've got an update for you, actually.
Oh, fantastic news.
A bit of fill-in on the George Galloway story. It's suspected that George Galloway, the Respect Party in Bradford West, a man much criticised for his heavy-handed tactics in 2012 by-election, a by-election which he called the Bradford Uprising. To fill us in with a few details here, we've got David Jeretich, who is our legal analyst for the night. Apparently. So he's going to tell us what's happened.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I'm your legal analyst, just generally speaking, I think. Not just for the night. I do work here.
Every day of your life.
Yeah, I'm there. Anyway, back to this. So what's happened is the BBC have reported that George Galloway was reported to police for essentially taking a photograph of the exit poll and publishing that before the polls officially close at 10 p.m. Now, this would be if, of course, it was proven that at this point there's no suggestion that it is in fact true. If proven, this would be a breach of Section 66A of the Representation of the People Act, which is essentially a provision preventing you publishing the result of the exit polls before voting has stopped for the night.
Sure, and we really want to highlight, don't we, that this is just suspected at the moment. We believe a returning officer has reported it to the police.
Yeah, that's what's being reported by the BBC.
Excellent stuff. And this is a man, of course, George Galloway as well, who has been much criticised by the media in particular. An incident with Naz Shah involving suspected that him or a member of his party put crow's feet on the doorstep of a competitor. Yep. So an interesting, it'll be interesting to see how this turns out. We'll be bringing more updates. But yeah, I mean, it is suspected at the moment, but if it is found guilty, what could the penalty be?
So yeah, if this went all the way and if he was found guilty, he could face either a fine or a jail sentence of up to 6 months. This is what we call a summary offence. Of those, I'm not sure which one would be more likely. We've seen far more serious electoral offences recently. At the end of April, it was proven that the Mayor of Tower Hamlets had committed a number of very serious electoral offences. So it's not quite on that level, but nonetheless, quite an interesting one to watch, I think.
And also rumours of possible voter intimidation in Scotland as well, more electoral.
Quite possibly. I mean, I don't know anything about those, so I can't really comment on them. But again, electoral law may well step in if something like that's happened. But intimidation, there can be other offences too, but I don't know anything about that, so I can't really comment.
One or two members and constituencies, sorry, may have overstepped the mark then. We'll bring you more updates in an hour. But for the time being, back to the studio. Keep going, guys. You're going to be fine.
Excellent.
Doing a great job.
So
I'm
much,
sure
Alex
all
David,
the people
great
living at, listening at home really appreciate what you're doing as well. So keep it up.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alex.
We appreciate that. So we've now been joined by our head of social media activities for the evening. That's the title I'm going to give you, Charlie.
I like it.
Welcome back. It's been an hour since we last saw you. What's been going on?
Not a great deal. Obviously, as the votes are being counted, those constituencies are being trending. So obviously, we have Swindon North, Sunderland, Nuneaton, and Battersea at the moment. Other than that, not a great deal until all of them get counted, I suppose. There is one thing. Tom Katsumu, weird name I know, on Twitter, he is actually live stitching the election results as they are happening. So he'll be stitching them in and then posting a picture of each
stitching, as in sewing.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
I know.
You mean literally,
stitching them in.
A term you just
No.
I thought it was some political term like swing, but no, stitching is.
I don't know why he came up with that idea. It's a bit random, but he's there's loads of pictures of him.
Someone's got to do it, Charlie.
Yeah,
someone's
that's
gotta
true.
Do it.
Yeah, and so that's at Tom Katsumu, weird name, but yeah, that's him.
Check him out. I want to see.
Yeah. Have a tweet of that. I'd also like to take this time to plug our Periscope because, you know,
we've been
live blogging as well. I'm sure she's been down here as well. I don't know. She's going all over the place. But obviously, that's just on our Twitter, which is Your Election 15. Mm-hmm. Go on that and then the Periscope link will be on that.
In danger of sounding like an OAP, what's Periscope?
Okay, Periscope.
I'm glad you asked Dom because I didn't know either.
She was just nodding along like, yeah. It's like live video, basically. Like Vine, but as it happens, live. Yeah.
Okay, so that's live video that you can access via our Twitter.
Yes, at Your Election 15.
So brilliant. Have you found a sort of social media started to dwindle as the night has gone on?
I think people are going to bed. Not all of us get to stay up all night and do this, you know? So, yeah, I think it'll be a bit of a lull until about 5-6 when everyone wakes up again.
Starts going to work and
yeah,
things, yeah.
And their memes will come back, the gaffes, you know, it'll be full of them.
I'm waiting on the memes. I'm counting
I know,
on the memes to get me through the evening.
That's all I look forward to.
Well, thanks very much, Charlie. Where are you off to next?
Back to TV, doing some more social media stuff there, I guess.
Enjoy.
Thanks.
Send on our regards to the TV team.
Will do.
Thank you, Charlie.
And I'm sure we'll be seeing you again later in the evening. Nope, morning. It's morning. Right, Dom, it's now time to head over to our reporter, Jason Lewis, who is covering the Mid Dorset and North Pool constituency.
Hello again, Jason. How are you?
Hello, Dom. I'm very well. We're still going. Plenty of time left here in Poole for this vote to come in, and it's getting a bit tense here at Lighthouse.
Very tense. Let's hear more about it. We hear there's a delay to the declaration.
Yes, that delay's come in part due to some postal votes coming in a large batch together, but the returning officers confirmed to me that they've got under control. They should be expecting the result here about 3 o'clock, so that's 40 minutes time by my watch, and it looks like it will be a hold in the Poole constituency for the Conservatives, a strong hold there for Richard Eades, which is to be expected really, but our eyes turn to the Mid Dorset and North Poole seat, and still no signs of Michael Tomlinson or Vicky Slade here at the Lighthouse, and really it's going to be all about them, I think, in the next hour or so.
Excellent. So Jason, how are you surviving so far? Lots of coffee keeping you through the night?
I'm not personally a coffee drinker, I'm afraid, Don. It's more the Red Bulls for me, the bottle of Coke, and I've got my Haribo Star Mix like I've had since about the age of 8, and I'm rammed up on sugar and feeling quite good about myself.
So Jason, my surrounding, if you can imagine it, is just a set of microphones, a big glass panel in front of me with a producer staring down my face with barrels. What's it look like where you are? It must be much a more exciting picture down there at Poole Lighthouse. Can you describe that to me?
Well, personally, in front of me, if you imagine the Wallace Lecture Theatre, I'm in the back row of an empty Wallace Lecture Theatre, but about 20 metres in front of me, I have a hall full of counters rushing through papers. You've got RO team flying around, throwing papers here, there and everywhere, and it's just quite exciting, really. You've got candidates milling around looking for the odd vote to see which way it's going, and it's just a great atmosphere, really, and it's a pleasure to be down here.
All very exciting, all very busy down there by the sounds of it.
Yeah, but busy is definitely busy, busy, busy.
Well, thanks ever so much, Jason. We'll be back with you around 3 o'clock then for those much-anticipated results.
Yes, definitely, Dom. Look forward to it. It's going to be a big day here in Poole.
Thanks, Jason. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.
So, it's time for our Generation Revolution feature. In the last hour, we found out if the students on the Bournemouth campus knew who was standing for the Conservative Party. Whilst many knew who David Cameron was, it was time to quiz the residents on the Labour Party.
Who is the leader of the Labour Party?
Nick Lowe. No?
Ed Miliband.
Ed Miliband?
Ed Miliband.
Ed Miliband.
Ed Miliband.
Boris Johnson.
Miliband.
That is... what's his name? I know exactly what he looks like.
Ed Miliband? Really? Wow!
I absolutely love features like that. That was brilliant. I love a guy who just confidently halfway through came up with Boris Johnson. It must be. He either didn't have a hope in hell of getting it right, so just thought, I'll say my answer with confidence, or he was 110% certain that that was Boris and not Ed.
I like to hope that he was certain about it and that was and that's what he wanted to say. I wonder if anyone corrected him.
I wonder. You didn't actually know it was Ed Miliband at first, though, did you?
That is a bit of a confession I do have to make. Although, I mean, obviously I do know now that it is Ed Miliband, but, you know, back when the politics was first starting to get in the news and people were talking about the Labour Party leader, I didn't actually have Ed Miliband's name in my head. I think I still had Gordon Brown. I think that was who I was still thinking of. I didn't actually realise he had been replaced. Obviously, David Cameron, I knew straight away because of, you know, he was our Prime Minister, so I knew him.
Oh, well done, you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I trust you are in safe hands here. We are obviously both well read up on our politics, aren't we?
Oh, I am now. Of course I am.
Some breaking news for you as it appears on the screen in front of me. I apologise if I get any of these details wrong, but it looks like Douglas Alexander has lost his seat. It looks like a victory for the seat there for SNP, and I believe that is for Renfrewshire in Scotland, and that's Lib Dem losing the seat to SNP. I will confirm that as the details come in, but that's what it's looking like. Here we go. SNP gain from Labour, sorry, my mistake, Paisley and Renfrewshire South in Scotland. That is a new seat to SNP, and it's Douglas Alexander losing out. We'll be bringing you all the latest information live across the UK, not only from Dorset in our 8 constituencies down here, but from across the UK where we can.
Streaming live on yourelection.co.uk and in partnership with Hope FM, you're listening to Your Election 15.
Don't forget, you can get in contact with the show via Twitter. Tweet us at YourElection15. Start your tweets with the word radio and use the hashtag YE15 to get in touch. Let us know what counts you're listening to, what you're still awake waiting for eagerly. I'm joined here by our legal expert again, David. Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
Not too bad. So obviously we're starting to approach time where results are going to be coming in left, right and centre. Is there anything in particular that you're excited about?
Well, quite a few things could pick up in the next while. Having a look at the reports, there are suggestions now that the Conservatives might be able to hold an actual overall majority in the Commons by the morning. That's not exciting from a constitutional point of view because it's straightforward and boring. So I'm hoping, out of purely academic interest, that a lot of these polls are shown to be wrong, and that it becomes more difficult for the Conservatives to command a majority. Because then you get to see these brilliant things where the existing Prime Minister will enter into negotiations with other parties. We get to think about kind of, you know, blocks of votes, who would support them, who would not support them in the Commons. Then we have people advising the Queen on what to do, and it all gets a little bit more, you know, but interesting is my perspective. Other people may think, yes, a bit more glitzy and glamorous.
If you could just shed some light on this for us. So for people who are perhaps not so well versed in politics, can you describe now the chances of us reaching a hung parliament by 10 o'clock tomorrow morning and what exactly that would mean? So in layman's terms, if you will, everyone talks about the fact that the exit polls are suggesting that perhaps we won't reach a hung parliament and that we will get a majority, whereas a lot of people beforehand were expecting to see a hung parliament come 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Can you explain the difference between the two and what exactly that means?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are 650 MPs in our parliament. And in order to, what we say, command the majority of the support of the House of Commons, what this means is you have to have enough MPs so that even if everybody else voted against you, you would still win. And that's what we'd call an overall majority, and that's the most common way to win an election. Now, the way the maths works is you might think, oh, that means I have to get 326 seats because that's half plus one. But our electoral system gets a bit different because you will have MPs from Northern Ireland representing Sinn Féin, who, as a matter of their policy, do not take up their seats. So the numbers reduce down and the magic number is about 322. So if the Conservatives have, I'm saying Conservatives because they're the largest party at the moment, if they have more than 322 seats, they will straightforwardly win the election. Now, a hung parliament means that they will have fewer seats than that, will have fewer than 322 seats. And that's when, to get their policies through, and in particular to win a vote on the budget, which has to be passed because otherwise they can't actually spend any money, that's the key one, they will have to rely on the support of other parties in this hung parliament. And what the solution was to that last time was a coalition. But depending on how many seats they have, they may not need a formal coalition.
Okay, thanks so much for that. It'll be great to get more of an insight from you later on. Live on the line now, we should have Daniel from Scotland. Is Daniel there?
Hi, how are we doing?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Not too bad. It's been a funny old night.
So we hear that things are starting to kick off in Paisley and Renfrewshire. Can you give us some more information on that one, please?
So the results for Paisley and Renfrewshire South have just been announced. That's, of course, Douglas Alexander's now former seat, the Shadow Foreign Secretary. He has been beaten by Mary Black, a 20-year-old politics student from Paisley. She's just given her speech congratulating Douglas Alexander, commiserating him. And paying tribute to his work, but a real focus on getting new powers for Scotland, an end to Trident and austerity, really fiery stuff from Mary Black, and she's obviously absolutely delighted.
Can you put that into perspective for us, Daniel? A lot of people here are reacting in quite a strong way to that. And for those who perhaps aren't so well versed on the situation in Scotland, what does this mean, this seat for SNP?
Well, this is absolutely massive. See, considering the last election, 2010, Douglas Alexander walked into Parliament with a majority of 59.6% of the vote. He's now been beaten by 6,000 to, as I said, a 20-year-old student. Quite astonishing. In terms of down where you guys are, obviously big in terms of a major player in the Labour Party is now gone. Won't be in the Parliament. That will cause problems for Ed Miliband, and it's yet more proof of the astonishing SNP surge that's going to make them key players in this next Parliament.
Daniel, Thanks ever so much for that, Daniel. It's great to have the scoop live from you, right from where you are. Best of luck for the rest of the evening, and thanks again for bringing us up to date with that.
No problem. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Daniel. Okay, so big news there. I think the first massive major upset of the day, Labour losing that seat to SNP in Scotland. The time is now approaching 2:30, which means it's time for your latest news updates.
Broadcasting on the web and locally on 90.1 Hope FM, this is your Election 15.
It's 2:30, I'm Jeff Buckeridge and this is the latest news. In Poole, the count has been delayed partly because of a large delivery of postal votes, but the result is expected within the hour. Meanwhile, as we've been talking about, the SNP has gained a seat in Kilmarnock and Loudoun, and the SNP hold Western Isles. Labour, the Conservative and the Lib Dems have all held more seats, whilst an independent hold down north with MP Sylvia Herman. Leader of the Scottish Conservatives, Ruth Davidson, admits that Nicola Sturgeon has done well if the exit poll predictions of an SNP surge in Scotland are accurate. The poll has suggested that the Nationalists could win 58 of the 59 seats in the nation.
This isn't an ordinary election in Scotland this year. There's been an SNP tsunami. We haven't had a single seat in Scotland declared yet, so it's a bit too early to say what's happened, but it does look as if, you know, it's not just ourselves that could be facing a difficult night, but it could be the Labour Party and the Liberal Democrats as well.
Political scientist John Curtis says we must now seriously consider a Conservative majority. He says the exit polls may have in fact underrepresented the Conservative gains. Former Labour leader Neil Kinnock said the Tories could do well because there are enough people who are willing to accept that myth and then think they are voting for their own security by voting for Conservative candidates. A senior UKIP source said the party have not given up on Nigel Farage winning the South Thanet seat, even though competition is tighter than the party would like. The source stated that the predictions so far are based on the results of Tory-leaning Broadstairs wards and not the UKIP-friendly Ramsgate. SNP sources in Paisley say that SNP student Myrie Black has defeated the man who had hoped to become Foreign Secretary, Douglas Alexander, who is the candidate for Labour in that constituency. Labour's education spokesman Tristram Hunt has told the BBC that the Prime Minister has played fast and loose with the union. He has accused David Cameron of putting his party before the country and believes that could have very damaging consequences. Tristram also believes that Ed Miliband has exceeded expectations, even if he fails to win more seats than Gordon Brown in 2010. He also believes that Ed Miliband's position as leader is not under threat. The Green Party saved its deposit in a North East seat for the first time ever in Newcastle upon Tyne East, where candidate Andrew Gray totaled 8.7%, a 7.1% improvement on the last general election. According to Press Association reports, the party said it had received 4.4% of the vote in the first six constituencies, up from 1% in 2010. The Daily Mirror has updated today's front page, changing the headline from the question, five more damned years, to just a statement, five more damned years. The loss of the question marks appears to confirm that the paper now feels the Conservatives will hold power. You're up to date with all the latest news, and we'll be back at 3 a.m.
Streaming live on yourelection.co.uk and in partnership with Hope FM. You're listening to Your Election 15.
The time has just gone 33 minutes past two. You're listening to Your Election 15, streaming live across the internet and also on 90.1 Hope FM across the Bournemouth, Dorset and Poole area.
Now we have another lovely student focus group who are joining us right now here in the studio. So hello to Amir, Danny and Alex.
Hello.
So guys, thank you for coming in today. So as we understand, you guys can talk to us about immigration.
Syria. I believe we're actually talking about the Syrian civil war.
Or yeah. Syria. Okay, let's go with that then. Let's go with Syria.
That's fine. Yes, as we've mentioned, Syrian civil war was a crucial point this term in which we saw political inaction and also in action on both sides. I'm joined with two other people today as well. So if you could just fill us a bit in about your backgrounds.
Yeah, my name is Amir and I'm from Syria originally, and I've been in the UK for 10 years. I've watched the conflict started more than 4 years ago now. It's claimed too many lives and too many people, millions, being displaced. I believe the West should intervene just to save the civilians, really, and for humanitarian aid and all of that. So, but at the same time, not to repeat the same mistake like when they intervened in Iraq and basically Libya, with all chaos happening.
And great warnings from our intervention in Iraq as well. I'm sure that's echoed with the people in Syria. As we saw in the developing situation in Syria from the start, we saw in Deraa, we saw the uprising in March 2011. Now,
yes,
this has been an extenuated, drawn out war. From you, I don't know if you still speak to people in Syria, but is there hope?
I think it's gonna take a long time, to be honest with you, because there is not much from the West to do something about it at the moment. It started, like as I said, more than 4 years ago, and people are suffering and struggling. Even I have family still in Syria. The safest place still Damascus, but still under threat from ISIL and the other group, which targeting civilians as well. So
because you mentioned there the political inaction, I just want to bring Danny in on this one. We saw Russia veto the UN Security Council measures that they wanted to take against Syria. To what extent has political inaction been caused by the friction between West and East?
I think, well, going back to when the decision was officially announced in the UK, it was more, you could see, an act of political unity. You could see that the Labour Party had, you could argue, learned from their mistakes from the 2003 invasion of Iraq and didn't want to repeat that. We've seen in recent times the mass immigrations coming in from Libya, how turning back on Libya has been, again, a massive downfall for the Conservative Party.
And we've seen in our own constituency, I mean, Bournemouth West, Conor Burns came out and criticised a hotel in Bournemouth for taking in refugees, saying it was harming business. Is this becoming, is this as much a UK problem as it is an international problem as well, political problem?
It's a European problem on the basis of countries like the UK, America and other parts of the EU, they intervened in Libya to protect the people. But at that point, they did not stay to help the new government develop. And it's caused mass.
So you believe it's government. Western superpowers' role to try and create stability in countries affected, like the Arab uprising nations?
I'd argue that it's the Western countries' duties to help complete a mission that they started, and you could argue that they walked out on it, and now it's led to these mass immigration from Libya to European countries. If possibly that they'd help to.
Okay, you know. I just wanted to bring Amir on this, because I mean you were talking about the Iraq invasion.
Yes.
Warnings for you there about Western intervention in the Middle East. It doesn't always go to plan. What for you would be the ultimate strategy for the UK to aid the Syrian people? I'm guessing from your point, the opposition.
They did have the UK contributed, I think, nearly £800 million so far, and thanks for that. But the Syrian people, whether are inside or outside Syria at the moment, in the camp refugees around Syria, for example, they have been affected in millions.
Sure, Turkey,
yeah,
Lebanon,
Turkey, yeah. Lebanon, Jordan, everywhere really. So they still need help with a lot of aids, to be honest with you.
Sure.
But the West always interfere under responsibility to protect. Mm. But at the same time, what happened in Libya and Iraq, as you mentioned, it's been chaos. They left the country with the chaos. We don't need to see that in Syria again, to be honest.
But I mean, we've seen so many echoes of the Iraq invasion. I mean, chemical weapons, 2013, the UN is suspicious initially, and then the allegations are confirmed by a team of independent investigators. To what extent they were used, still unknown. The video is coming out quite horrific. At what point do you think it would have been right to act, or is it too late now to act?
It's been 4 years. I think if they wanted to act, they would have acted from the very beginning. when the first 2,000 being killed, but now 100,000 being killed, and I think it's too late to act now. And we don't really have any evidence who's using this chemical weapons in Syria at the moment.
And I mean, Danny as well, I wanted to bring back, because now we're entering sort of the latter stages in the framing of the war. We've had the uprising, the humanitarian fallout, and we've now got the terrorism frame being used quite a lot.
Yeah.
To you, how does ISIS pose a threat to the great British public, if it does at all?
I think the biggest threat that ISIS has given to the UK is the idea of extremism amongst young Muslims in this country. We've seen a number of people travelling to Syria to join Islamic State. It's something that we need to help stop. We need to help, you know, educate and potentially, you know, stop them from
deciding that
extremism is the wrong way.
Do you think that comes though from stopping people coming back into the UK if they've been abroad under the suspicion of carrying out terrorist acts? Or
I think first of all it needs to be something that society needs to do. Mm. The biggest problem is nationally.
Yeah. So, thank you very much for the panel joining us, to Amir and to Danny as well. Amir, especially, being a Syrian as well, I'm sure it's something close to your heart. So,
thank you very much for
having
me.
No problem.
Fantastic. Thanks ever so much for that, guys. I'm sure we'd love to hear more on that topic later. But thanks ever so much for joining us.
Thank you. Okay, so we're now heading down to the Littlewood Centre, where Stephanie Tashiva is all eyes and ears.
Stephanie, we're roughly 15 minutes away from the expected results for Bournemouth East and West. Can you tell us the latest?
Well, actually, it turns out that we won't know the results before 5 or 5.30 in the morning, as the county stakes more time.
And why is that, Stephanie?
I think it took, I'm not sure why, but it did take extra time for the vote counters to separate the different votes, for those for the council and those for the general election.
Okay, and how is it looking down there? Is the attention starting to gather?
Yes, I think so. The party candidates, they look quite excited. They're constantly walking around talking to different people. The vote counters, however, some of them seem a bit tired, and I think quite reasonable.
Well, thanks so much, Stephanie. We'll come back to you throughout the evening. Let us know if anything changes. And if not, we look forward to those results anticipated around 5.30, you say?
Yes, 5.30 or 5.
Okay, thanks so much, Stephanie. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
Thanks, bye.
So don't forget, you can get in contact with the show this evening. Tweet us at yourelection15 using the hashtag YE15. Start your messages with the word radio. It'd be great to hear from you this evening, what counts you're looking forward to, what you're making of some of the seats that have been won, not just held. We've seen SNP gain a seat this morning, early hours of the morning, in Renfrewshire in Scotland. It's all getting quite exciting. Results are starting to flood in. Around 3 o'clock, we're going to be heading back to Jason to see if he's got the latest on a very key marginal seat in Dorset. But right now, we're joined again in our studio by a panel. We have in here with me, we have Shelley, we have Ina, and we have...
Tiana.
Tiana, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
So, yeah, thank you for joining us, guys. So what patterns appear to be emerging from the votes counted?
Probably the patterns that we're seeing up in the results team is that actually the Conservatives might be doing even better than the exit polls are suggesting. I mean, this is just, you know, very, very early kind of observations, but you're looking at the kind of turnout is perhaps a little bit lower than we might have expected, and we're looking at the declared results, and possibly the Conservatives may end up with an even higher number of seats if they, of course, continue to go the way they are. So we're looking at kind of 316 seats was the original kind of estimate from that exit poll, or at least the most optimistic exit poll. So maybe it's slightly more than that. If we're talking more than that, they may well go into a minority government, supported perhaps by some of the other parties like Liberal Democrats or DUP, or we might actually see, potentially a Conservative majority. But that's, you know, kind of stretching it slightly, but it's a possibility.
So if you dare to speculate, obviously building up to this election, a lot of hype was gathered around the fact that it's going to be a hung parliament. I think a lot of people expected that to be the way. In terms of, if you could speculate now, what are the chances of us actually having a hung parliament by 10 o'clock tomorrow morning? That's the answer people want to know.
We will still have a hung parliament, is my view. A hung parliament simply means that no single party can command the confidence of the House as a single party. So they will need a support from one other party. So I suspect that will still be the case, even though there is a slight possibility that the Conservatives might just get to the kind of magic number, if you like, 326. But I suspect we'll have a hung parliament. The key thing that I think is a difference here is that, you know, up until this evening, we were talking about the possibility of Ed Miliband or David Cameron, either of them, being able to create enough of a support for their own party to become prime minister. What we're looking at now is probably the most likely outcome is going to be David Cameron being prime minister and probably Ed Miliband resigning in the morning.
Okay, so on that note, it's approaching 3:15 in the morning. This, I'm going to call it early stage, would you believe? Who would you say are the real winners and the real losers at 2:45 in the morning? Who's done well? Who stood out? Who's on top? And who isn't? Who are the real strugglers right now?
I guess in Scotland, you'd have to remember that SNP have literally taken every seat apart from one. They've done very well. I mean, they were expected to, and they are the real winners in Scotland, which I think is very interesting considering how much they would be for the next, then their policies would be for separating Scotland with England. Also, I would say that Liberal Democrats have done exceedingly poorly. I personally, as a politics student, didn't think they were going to do well, but I didn't think they were going to do as badly as they have done in some of their constituencies, or some of the constituencies we've had information from in terms of voting. So I think that's really interesting.
And as you say that, it looks like SNP have just gained another seat from Labour as well. More on that later in our next news bulletin, I'm sure. At this early stage as well, I haven't heard too much of UKIP. A lot of anticipation from them ahead of the election. Would any of you care to shed some light on how you think they're doing? What with Farage looking like he may potentially not hold his seat in his constituency?
Well, it would be a gain rather than a hold, of course. But I think there was a big issue there, of course, and that was that Farage sort of gambled and said, you know, he would kind of suggest that he would resign if he didn't take that seat. It looks like UKIP is coming second in quite a few constituencies. It looks like they are actually performing incredibly well, sort of in a popular vote, if you like. But in terms of actually gaining those seats, they may get two seats, but it looks like it might not be Farage as one of them. And that will be one of the standout kind of results of the night if that happens, given the kind of swell in support that he was able to kind of command in the early stages of the campaign.
Well, thanks very much for that, guys. We'll be coming back to you later on in the show. If there's any final closing notes, Shelley, anything you'd like to add?
No, I think they've said it really well.
In that case, thanks ever so much. Keep your eyes and ears peeled on everything that's unfolding. I'm sure we'll be back with our expert panel later on to tell us how things are shaping up, the more seats that we hear about. Thanks ever so much for joining us again, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we're going to be going to Emily now in West Dorset to check in with her. Emily, are you there?
Hello, yes, I'm here.
Emily, how's things shaping up in West Dorset?
Yeah, the count is very underway now. Everyone's frantically counting all the ballot papers. A few of the candidates are here. I'm with the UKIP candidate, David Glossop, at the moment.
Okay, now here you're going to be speaking. We've got an interview lined up for later on in the show.
With we can do it right now. I've got the UKIP candidate here right now.
Excellent.
So I'll just fire some questions, if that's okay.
Please, yeah, crack on.
Go for it.
So, Mr. Glossop, Conservatives have held this seat since the constituency was created. Do you think UKIP realistically have a chance of changing that tonight?
Not tonight.
It's been conservative since 1895 and very staunch conservative. I don't think there's any chance of UKIP taking over, and I don't think there's any chance of any other party taking over.
What sort of result are you hoping for UKIP in general tonight then?
I have two personal wishes. One, that my deposit will be saved, and the second one is that I will come second to the Conservatives.
And how do you feel about the indications from the exit polls earlier? It seemed that UKIP didn't necessarily come out as well as once thought.
It depends where the exit polls, of course, are conducted. In central London, we know that UKIP haven't done well and probably won't do well. But I am very jaundiced against all forms of polls and pollsters. I think they have got this election forecast totally, totally wrong.
OK, that's great. Thank you very much. That's all I've got to update you from here at the moment, but hopefully we'll check in with you later when we get closer to revealing the count.
Thanks very much for that, Emily. Do you know when exactly that's going to be?
We're hoping to be around 4 o'clock, but we're not too sure yet. It could be a bit later.
All right, OK. Much expected. We'll speak to you later on. Thanks, Emily. So you heard there the reaction from the UKIP candidate there in West Dorset, saying that he believes these exit polls conducted in Westminster have got it very much wrong. What do we make of that?
I guess it's, the exit polls tend to be very accurate, but it's the opinion polls that were kind of on the eve of the election that really seems to have got it wrong. At least that's what the picture seems to be kind of shaping up at the moment. And there will be some serious questions that they will have to answer, the pollsters there, in terms of, what happened. And of course, predictions are difficult, but they would need to seek to try and understand what it was about their methodology that seems to have got it quite so wrong. If, and I, do say this with a caveat, if it turns out the way we are expecting, given the exit polls.
Well, thanks so much for your feedback, guys. Again, as I said, I'm sure we'll be catching up with you guys later on. And in the meantime, we're now going to hand over to Matt Joy. Our very own couch potato is back once again. He's been watching all the TV coverage of the elections. So we'll be speaking to Matt right after this.
Broadcasting on the web and locally on 90.1 Hope FM. This is your Election 15.
So, Matt, here you are once again. It's that time of the hour, I guess.
It is. It is. It's nice to be back.
Oh, I'm glad.
Missed the studio very much so.
You're a lot happier this time.
I don't know if it's the coffee or it's
It must be.
It's a small part. No, I've been watching the Channel 4 alternative coverage, which I've been saying I'm going to watch all night, but I finally got round to tuning into that, and I'm actually very, very, very impressed. A little part of me, was a bit worried that it was perhaps going to just be too, let's try and be funny, let's try and jazz it up. But in fairness, there was a great mix between comedy and information, and that was encapsulated by Paxman, who was hosting it. He was informative, when results were coming in, he was giving the opinions, he was letting everyone know, but he was doing it in a good way, in an informative but amusing way. There was a good range of features and debate, so sometimes they cut away from the studio, had some pre-recorded stuff coming in, that was really good. What I did quite like, they weren't shouting over each other. When there was a debate, sometimes you get, people from all sides of the political landscape come in, and they just want their voice to be heard. And the way to do that, they feel, is to just shout. But they knew when to shut up.
For once, yeah.
And I don't know if it's the fact that there was, it's more comedy orientated. But they knew when to let other people talk, let their get their voice across. The studio audience was really respectful in that nature. When someone wanted to say something, they were quiet. When they said something good, they laughed or applauded, depending on whether it was funny or just genuinely a good thing to say. And the guests were really good. David Mitchell was fantastic, and so was Richard Osman from Pointless. He was another man who was, they weren't taking it too seriously, but they were taking the bits they needed to take seriously. They were taking them seriously, and that was a really good touch, I thought.
So they had the right balance.
Exactly, and it was a nice balance. It was easy watching, and sometimes, some of the insults or some of the negative aspects of politics for people perhaps our age, they say politics is boring. Well, this was a good mix. This had the information, but it wasn't stifled. It wasn't it wasn't like a snobbish sort of delivery. It was, you know, it
accessible
was
for
everyone, yeah. No matter, you know, background, political knowledge, anything, you know, who you vote for. It was all encompassed and it was expressed in a brilliant way, and anyone could have watched that and enjoyed it.
So is there a whole host of comedians on the Channel 4, or is it just a select few?
For the hour I watched, they had some reactions from the Gogglebox.
Oh, really?
A few of the people off that, which was brilliant, because
that was hilarious.
Obviously, one of my favourite programmes. It does show. It gave more of a sort of, you know, an everyday perspective. They did have a select number of comedians, the two I said that were on the panel, but they did also cut to, you know, bits from the election, bits from counting halls. You know, when results were coming in, and they were that bit was like news. You know, that wasn't just a few blokes taking the mick. That was genuine news, and that was genuine information being displayed. So they knew when to be funny and they knew when to be serious, which was a great mix.
It's a really good balance to have. It makes a change from your previous hour with your negative ITV.
Yeah, that was a struggle.
That drained you,
certainly,
didn't it?
Yeah, that was when I hit the midnight wall.
So are you going to carry on with Channel 4, do you think, or are you going to switch it up?
I think I might try and head downstairs. I might try and and if people aren't too busy and I'm not stepping on too many people's feet, I'm going to try and have a look around, see the goings on, see how everything's put together, how busy it is. Is it, you know, is it like here where it's quite relaxed, quite informal, or is it all hands on deck, full on? So yeah, that'd be interesting to see. But I've got to smile nicely at people and hope they let me in. So, and at nearly 3 o'clock in the morning, that could be interesting because people's patience may be starting to decline somewhat.
I can imagine it may well be. Well, thanks ever so much,
my
Matt.
My pleasure.
Go back and enjoy your telly.
As you keep saying. I will, thank you.
Right, I think it's time for Hannah to go and hit the Zed bed and get a little bit of a break. So I'll fly solo and I'll be joined very shortly by Betty as well. In the meantime, let's head back to our Spotify playlist. We've been comprising some political tunes for you. So far, we've listened to the likes of Bob Dylan, UB40, and Bruce Springsteen, so I can only anticipate what is next. But before we play the next track, remember, if you can think of any political context, let us know. Don't forget you can get in touch with us by tweeting your suggestions to YourElection15 and start your tweet with the word radio. Our ninth song on the playlist is Public Enemy with Fight the Power, followed by Ghost Town, The Specials. Let's take a listen to what these bad boys sound like.
Best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
Well, there you go. There's the next two big tracks on our political playlist for the evening. For those of you who've just tuned in, this is Hope FM with the political hit session. And we've just had The Fight for Power by Public Enemy, followed by The Specials by Ghost Town. Looking back on Public Enemy's song, that was their most recognisable song released in 1989. Whilst the lyrics reflect a negative opinion of authority figures, the group stressed that this is a non-anti-authority song. They said it was more about the importance of fighting the abuse of power. So, I now have a new co-host, Betty.
Hello.
You may recognise her voice from such features as... How are you doing?
Yeah, no, I'm really good, thank you.
At 2 minutes, roughly, to three in the morning, are you feeling wide awake?
Yep, feeling very bright and chirpy, as it happens.
I am very glad that you're feeling bright
and
chirpy.
I've just had a 40-minute break where I have sat down and reevaluated my life.
So, and what conclusion did you come to?
Why am I doing this? No, I'm joking. It's great fun.
Good.
I'm really enjoying it.
A lot of sincerity in your voice there.
No, it is great.
Obviously, we're approaching that very exciting time. It's coming towards 3 a.m, which means results are going to be flying in left, right and centre.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's going to be... It's an exciting time to be live on air. We're going to be throwing back over to Paul Lighthouse very shortly. Our reporter, Jason, is there on the ground. And he's going to hold the answer to one of the most anticipated questions down here in Dorset, the result of that one key marginal seat in North Dorset. He'll also have the results with Paul, which looks to be a Conservative hold, a safe seat there. many are expecting. But Jason will be giving us the scoop on that very shortly. We also have other reporters out across the field in West Dorset as well as East. And it's going to be exciting to see what their counts are looking like, despite the fact we have learnt that most of them are looking to be delayed to nearer 4:30, 5 o'clock. But we'll keep you informed.